And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Michael Bailey. Hello. There's no Joe this week, again, I'm afraid. But we do have John McKenzie.
Hello.
There he is. Not stroking his beard yet. We also have JJ Bull.
Yes.
Who's here as well. And today we spoke about so many amazing things. England and Scotland's League Cups and the fact they have three handles and maybe why. A refreshed Tottenham that are still painful on the eyes. How painful would it be to put grit in your eyes? Don't do that at home, please. Who would be a sorbet manager? A palate cleanser for Chelsea if they sack Graham Potter. John is very excited about Javi Gracia at Leeds.
Yes.
Yes.
Wildly so.
And by way of a little digestive of Ligue 1 football, etc. Yes, and if you want to hear even more about all of those things, you should get The Athletic, shouldn't you, JJ?
Yes.
What have you read that was lovely on The Athletic recently?
Oh, I've read all of it.
Wow.
I read every single article.
That is a lot.
That's ever been written on The Athletic this week.
Because there is a huge palette and
might
menu.
I tell you, there are many.
You might.
It took a long time. Seb wrote something today.
Excellent.
About the Bundesliga.
Which you obviously read.
Seb's always really good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd read Seb.
Do that. And everyone else as well. And you too can read The Athletic with a 30-day free trial. And the only way you can do that through this podcast is to go to, JJ?
TheAthletic.com/TIFO. And then you can read articles like Michael Bailey's analysing Marquinhos' Norwich's debut.
The other Marquinhos.
You've got a Nunez as well, haven't you?
Yeah, Nunez. It's got a better goal than Darwin in midweek.
Yeah,
how was the debut?
Are you just signing players who have good names now?
Yeah, in the hope. Yeah. In the hope. Or maybe it's...
He sounds good.
Maybe it's just where the scouting went wrong. They thought they were getting the other one. Anyway, there's enough of that and enough of Norwich. I will definitely not mention them again. In the meantime, I will leave you with the, I'll get this right this week, cool hands and the even warmer embrace of Steve Hankles. Let's begin with the English League Cup. Manchester United 2-0 Newcastle United. Manchester United have won their first major trophy since the 2017 UEFA Europa League, which was five years and lots of days ago. Should we have the debate about whether it is a major trophy or not, or should we just bask?
Because John got angry earlier, so I like that. Let's go into that. Let's get John fired up.
First major trophy for Manchester United in 5 years, John.
Yeah, it's not a major trophy.
I don't know how you can say that.
Well, what's a minor trophy then, if that's a major trophy? And then what's in between? What's the mid trophy?
It's when you can dig the most coal.
The last time Manchester United won their trophy, minor or major, as I said, was in 2017, when I think it was Jose Mourinho classed it as part of their treble.
I know what it is. It's when it sounds quite sad.
I think that if there is two levels of competition, so in England, the domestic trophy is the FA Cup and then the League Cup, right? In that order, it doesn't make it not a major trophy. And that's why the Europa League is not a major trophy either, because you should have won the Champions League, right? It's simple.
But it's still a trophy. It's still a trophy, JJ.
What's
United have won a trophy.
Right, so you get all these people who will say that, well, you can't say they're good unless they win a trophy. And suddenly it's important when it's a final or it's a semi-final. Then it's important, apparently. But other than that, or if they don't win it, it doesn't matter. The whole point is you're trying to win trophies. Isn't that the point of football? You're trying to win stuff? It's changed now. It's not about that. It's about making sure you compete always at the top for the best football signings. That's what I think. It's not even about the like the Premier League, really. It's about who you sign in the window. It's people more excited about. You win, like Man City won a trophy when they bought Erling Haaland. I really think that's how it works now.
Oh.
Champions League's obviously the big thing. That's the biggest one to win. The World Cup is actually like the pinnacle of football. Then the Premier League, that's how you judge who the best one is. But if you win the Premier League and the next season you start the you lose four games in a row, you draw two and only win one, then suddenly it doesn't matter that you won the league whatsoever. It doesn't matter. But if you sign Erling Haaland, you win it. I'm just trying to get you on the theory.
I like the theory. I mean, I guess there's a lot of people in football who run football who love the idea of it all being about the places and the money and the things. But actually, the players and the managers and the supporters, it is just about winning something. And also, it's about relativity, isn't it? Norwich have only won one major trophy, which is the League Cup. Don't take it away from them, John. But likewise, where Manchester United are, winning the League Cup represents a stepping stone, surely, to more silverware. Maybe bigger silverware, but silverware nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, the stepping stone thing is interesting.
Thanks.
Because I think Manchester United have won cups in the past, and it's not been a stepping stone, right? Louis van Gaal won the FA Cup. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got them to the Europa League final, and Mourinho won the Europa League final. And,
part of his treble.
And did he win the League Cup as
won
well?
Won the League Cup and the Community Shield that year. That's obviously a treble.
Like, we can surely agree that the Community Shield isn't a major trophy.
No, you count that as well, because you count all the trophies at the end of the season, all the ones you've won, and that counts as one.
Now, that is a minor trophy, because you've literally only got there because you won another trophy. And it's like, let's have a friendly get-together and see
it's
how
it's
not
a major trophy, but it still counts as a trophy.
Club World Cup, then, not a major trophy.
But that...
count it. You've got to be in it to
games.
Win it.
Yeah,
what if you only get
games.
Into the Champions League because you won it the season before?
Well, then you're defending champions, so that's fine.
Cup
that's
Winners' fine. Cup, that was a major trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that had a sensible...
The Fairs Cup, or whatever it was called.
Yeah. Europa Conference League.
But this is the thing with these trophies, right, is it's all relative. If Newcastle had won it, the fans would have gone nuts for days because it would be a huge thing. The first trophy they would have won since 1955. They've always wanted to win one. I had a soft spot for Newcastle growing up. You still love watching them. And I remember watching the FA Cup finals in 99 and 2000, and, closer than 2001 maybe, I can't remember. But I remember Shearer lost both. And
specifically.
Arsenal, Man United. Yeah, because Shearer was the big draw at the time, right? Because he was the world's most expensive player by a million miles, especially when you counter in inflation or whatever. So that's the thing. So Newcastle, huge deal to them. For Man United, it's point to prove that they are on the right path now. They've returned to their winning ways, and therefore that's what it means. It means that to them, but to Newcastle it means, oh, suddenly we've won a trophy. There was people being interviewed outside Wembley, like older guys, like 60-odd, who were so emotional. They were crying, like talking about how excited they were just to be there, that they knew that there's suddenly hope, optimism. And the hope you have as the fan is that there are blue skies above, there's not a glass ceiling. You are then able to do things like reach cup final trophies, finals, and then win trophies, because that's what it should be about. You get to celebrate on the day you win. I mean, Aberdeen, the last trophy that Aberdeen won was a League Cup in 2013-14, I think it was. Maybe, yeah, I think it was that. Enormous. The first trophy in about 20 years. It absolutely huge for us there. But Rangers and Celtic don't really matter because they win them every single year. But it's still a cup. Like, try telling St Johnstone when they won the double a few years ago that that's not a big achievement.
That's what I'm saying. Norwich, you know? Two-time Cup winners. Yeah. But that's okay.
But different clubs have different levels of
needs.
Expectations, right? And that's why this is an interesting one, because everyone is viewing this as a necessary stepping stone to something bigger. But I don't necessarily buy that. I think obviously the big question with Manchester United is, you know, what level will they reach under Erik ten Hag? And as things stand, it looks like they're definitely going to be, you know, competing at the highest level within a few seasons. But for me, there is a lot more than just simply winning a League Cup to prove that you're at that level. And for me, that is more important than the actual League Cup itself.
Yeah, which, they are competing. That's the actual real competition.
Yeah. And I guess that for me, like, the future now is going to be about, like, I still think and have said that Manchester United are still not at the level that they would want to be in terms of performances. And I think even the game yesterday, I think they spent long stretches of that game sitting deep and absorbing. I think that Newcastle, I think, you know, you can argue both ways about whether or not Manchester United caused Newcastle to be quiet and not generate too many chances. But I felt in many respects in the game yesterday, Newcastle had the better moments. They progressed the ball better. They got the ball into the opposition's final third. They had more shots in the box, for example. And in some respects, Manchester United were playing sort of underdog football for periods of that game. That's not the level that Manchester United want to be at. That's not the level that Erik ten Hag wants to be at. And that is not the level that you have to be at if you're going to consistently challenge in the big tournaments, right? Like the Premier League and the Champions League. So I still think that Manchester United have a ways to go. I think the trajectory is incredible under Erik ten Hag. But there is still questions to be raised about like how that progression is going to look in the next few seasons.
This week, United could have gone out of the Europa League. Could easily have lost the League Cup final. They've got FA Cup coming up during the week. And they're still, I mean, they look good for finishing at least third in the league. The trajectory is 100%. It's right up there. He's done an incredible job, Ten Hag. Everyone's bought into it. He's made average players look good, which is hard to do. And he's got a system that clearly works with players all inside. He's just changed what the... They're now a team you would fear to play against, whereas that hasn't maybe been a thing for a while. It seemed that everyone thought there was a bit of a vulnerability that they could maybe target. Like they knew where the bit on the boss was to target with your arrow, that sort of thing. It's a video game. But now you don't know exactly where that is. I think the way that he dealt with the last two games tactically is really interesting, because against Barcelona, he made clear changes that were... He didn't change player for player. He changes things to make something else work within the game. Usually, I mean, I'm sure there are player for player stuff he does, but... He made clear decisions that helped them win the game against Barcelona. We've got a video about that in Tifo IRL. And then I think against Newcastle, I sort of half agree with John Mahal. I think a lot of it was on purpose. I think to do with having the quick turnaround from Barcelona, how tired they would have been. I think it made sense to then let Newcastle just go for it and use all their energy up, absorb them, hit them in the transition. And then you get Rashford and that hitting them where it would hurt them. And I thought I didn't feel really Newcastle were in the game much. I thought Man United kind of had them and they just kept them at arm's length. Didn't create huge amounts of chances, but I never felt like, you know, you sort of feel there's not, that Newcastle weren't really ever going to win that.
I think after 2-0 down in very quick succession from like a set piece and then a goal that was very lucky,
yeah,
sure. But like, they didn't have to do a huge amount to get to that point. Now,
yeah.
Again, that
yeah, you may be right,
you play the opponents that you come up against. I thought that both teams were sort of fairly meh and... maybe that's just a final. That's what
fairly.
A final
met, and then maybe
like.
Man United had the better players, so that's why they came.
Yeah, and look, if Erik ten Hag sat down and went, okay, let's just sort of ride the game out and you know take our chances when they come up, then fine. But I don't think that he will have gone into the game thinking that, and I don't think he would want to go into games of that magnitude thinking that they should sort of play.
But I don't think that's what he did. I mean, the way you look at it is, you know how Newcastle are going to play, loads of energy. He was doing the Alex Ferguson thing of trying to make sure everyone knew that they'd waste time and try and slow the game down to do it how they want to do. So we can try and slow down the momentum from the very start and the way they want to go at them. Newcastle don't really generate great chances anyway. They don't score that many goals. They have good defence. They tend to play a high line. Because they play a high line, you can use your strengths, like Rashford and Anthony was on the right, wasn't he, from the start? I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Or was it Fernandes in the middle? Yeah. I mean, I watched the game. I did a video on it. I can't remember all the subtle details. But like, he played Diallo from the start because they want to be in the front foot. That's the idea, right? You play Diallo rather than Wan-Bissaka. Maybe you play Diallo because you know Diallo can play in the front foot from the start, from right back. But also, he can take a yellow card early on to get rid of Saint-Maximin, and then you can put on Wan-Bissaka later. So Wan-Bissaka doesn't get the yellow card that he might get if he played earlier because he'd be making more tackles against Saint-Maximin. And then you let Saint-Maximin stay wide, and then you have Casemiro coming up to double up on him. That's the main threat from wide. Or is it really a threat? Because although he's good with the ball, he doesn't often release it in the way you know him to. And then they sort of played against Newcastle high line. They could hit them in transition where they knew they would be able to do that. They don't have to press them high. There's no need to do that. Expend loads of energy. Play it calm. And then things would come from that. I mean, that's not a bad way to manage the game.
Yeah, sure. But I kind of feel as though I was surprised at the way that they played, because I thought they would cause Newcastle a lot more problems, and they didn't really. Maybe that's... They scored their first goal in, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Before that, they didn't really generate a huge amount.
John's just in a minor trophy final slump. I think that was probably part of the problem. But speaking of minor trophies, France binned off their League Cup, the Coupe de Ligue, which is pretty much how you pronounce that in French, I'm sure. The last Coupe de Ligue was won in 2020 by PSG, apparently. So that's exciting.
It's good. Well,
is it?
Well, because those French fans had a chance to go to Wembley.
Exactly. Giants completing the treble that included their own community shield. Perhaps with those reflections on Newcastle, we're not going to worry about them, obviously, but does it feel like the meteoric rise, which is not true because you can't rise like a meteor, but the way they were rising earlier in the season, that's going to now tail off slightly like the tail of a comet with more space analogies. Are we worried about Newcastle, but not worried about them, obviously?
Not worried about Newcastle, but they've probably peaked with all the momentum, and a lot of what they're doing relies on the momentum of what they are doing, if that makes sense. If you're going to play with loads of energy and intensity, you need to keep that up, and it's very hard to sustain that level of intensity and momentum over the course of an entire season. It might just be they're going through a little blip now, and then in a couple of weeks they're back at it. But the reason they've done so well is from their defensive record, not their goal scoring one. But they've got players like Alexander Isak coming back into it. Saint-Maximin is back. Like, such a difficult player to watch because he's so fun on the ball, but his output is poor. He's been a lot better this season, I think. But they're fine. Like, Newcastle are on an upward trajectory, but it's a hill, whereas Man United have gone up it like they're in a lift.
They might be a bit deflated now, though.
Or stairs, maybe.
They've lost their final.
I do think that for a team like Newcastle, they're in a really weird context insofar as, like, a couple of, like, last season, they were in a relegation battle.
They were below Norwich.
Yeah, they dragged their way out of it. And as a result of that, I think a lot of teams have struggled to know how to come up against them tactically, because they're playing quite a unique tactic in many respects, but also because teams are still not quite sure of what level Newcastle are at. And yeah. I think what's going to happen in the second half of the season now is that a lot of teams who've been maybe a little bit more open to the idea of playing the way that they usually play against Newcastle are now going to just sort of sit deeper.
I was thinking that, yeah, exactly. It always happens to teams that do really well at the start. And then, so you don't, trying to think of like Wolves are an example of it. No one really worried about Wolves too much. And then teams started realizing, oh, they're quite good, so we better sit deep against them. And you've got to change the way you play completely because you can't just run. Newcastle carry the ball and they dribble all the way through the pitch. Everyone runs with the ball and they go direct with it. But you can't do that if the team's sitting back because they'll just come at you.
And they've dropped out of the top four now after having had a few games like that, right, where they've really struggled to break down teams who've sat deeper. And that's going to be the challenge for them for the rest of the season. I think they're super unlucky to not still be in the top four in many respects. But yeah, this is how Premier League football goes.
They've got two games in hand, I think, off the top of my head.
Yeah, two games in hand, 4 points off Spurs and fourth, yeah.
And we will be talking more about other bits around that in a tickle. But of course, Newcastle will always have the 2006 Intertoto Cup.
Another major trophy.
That a major trophy, which also qualified them for the UEFA Cup. Perhaps one of the biggest cups.
And back in the day, the UEFA Cup was great.
Yes, especially 1993-94.
I remember watching Newcastle in that. I remember Ginola scoring an amazing goal in the UEFA Cup. Was it the UEFA Cup?
The UEFA Cup became the Europa League, right? Is that not?
Is it that or the Champions League when Keith Gillespie set up an Asprilla hat-trick against Barcelona?
Well, I'll tell you what, from one three-handed trophy to another, because thus the Scottish League Cup also has three handles. Handles. Scottish League Cup, where Rangers won to Celtic in a no doubt extremely friendly Scottish League Cup final that Celtic won. And Celtic are very good. And although Rangers have made progress, they're going to do very well to catch up Celtic anytime soon, JJ. Because Celtic could win the treble this year. And if they do under Ange Postecoglou, that would be their fifth treble in 7 years. Which is ridiculous.
Yes and no.
No?
Well, the problem with looking at how good Celtic are is you have to put it all into context at a time. So when they were winning, the season or the couple of seasons where Brendan Rodgers' team, I think it was 69 games they went unbeaten. I mean, it's a pretty amazing number. But, they should win every single game because the difference, I did a video on this ages ago in T4IRL, the money difference, money doesn't decide games. Games of football are won on the pitch. But over a course of a season, the best team will always win. That's what will happen. And Celtic are exponentially ridiculously far ahead of everyone else. Rangers are also very far ahead. I mean, look at the goal difference in the league, and it goes from Hearts with 8 goals difference plus in third position, then Rangers are at 38. Like, that's the jump you certainly go to. They're just different. They're in a different world, those two teams. So they should win. But then Celtic have a slight advantage. Well, maybe not. It's like they're better than Rangers just now. They have better players and they're really well organised. Rangers in a bit of transition because Gio van Bronckhorst wasn't doing a terrible job, but they weren't great under van Bronckhorst. So they've changed him. Michael Beale, who was the mind behind Steven Gerrard's, maybe that's harsh on Gerrard, but all the tactics, he ran training, and apparently he had a really large say in the tactical setup of Rangers. And it makes sense because they're playing a lot like how they played under Gerrard now that Michael Beale is back. And they'll take time. And they lost a game, a one-off final. So they only lost by one goal. Sometimes Celtic will win the cup. Sometimes Rangers will win the cup. Sometimes St Johnstone will win both cups. But it's not a huge gap. I don't know what the question was. Sorry, I forgot what you asked.
I think you answered it, whichever it was. But probably worth...
Oh, yeah, it could have been another treble, yeah.
Well, they're that. I mean, yeah, for all the trophy, it does seem that Celtic have won most of the trophies, well, minor and major.
do you know, this is the thing for me with in Scotland with the Cups, right? So we talk about how Man United and Newcastle got to the League Cup final and they didn't play incredible teams on the way to get there, or Man United didn't anyway. Well, there you go. So you get to the final and then what does it really mean to have won the final? You've got a trophy. What does it actually prove? Are you better than anyone who's the best in the country? You don't really know, right? Because you're not playing. It's not Man U versus Man City. You're not suddenly like, we're better than you now. It's not what it is. But in Scotland, if Aberdeen were to beat, that's my team because you weren't sure, if Aberdeen were to beat either Rangers or Celtic in a quarterfinal, that's the same as winning the cup because that's the best you can possibly beat in the league. But you win them, you beat them, and then you get like Dundee United after that, and you lose to them 1-0 from a penalty. And then like you're out the trophy, and then they go on, or St Johnstone go on and win the double that single year, right? When you beat them once, it's like winning a trophy. It's so stupid.
But then to lose after that would be like crushing, surely.
Yeah, it's sort of, you're just like, oh, well, that's football.
Yes, that is football. Yeah. I love it. Ange Postecoglou is good, though. That's the question.
Yes, he is good.
Although, is he good though?
I think the balance between Celtic and Rangers at the moment is quite interesting because it feels to me like almost analogous to the balance between Liverpool and Man City in the past few seasons when they were both challenging for the title every season. Because I think Ange Postecoglou is very much a sort of Pep Guardiola acolyte in that sort of sphere. So he thinks about a little bit more transitional, a little bit more exciting than in terms of like heavy metal than Pep in that respect. But thinks about positional play, wants to get his players in good positions, and is all about build up, really good build up, exciting, attacking football. Rangers, I find a little bit more about like intensity at the moment. They have been under van Bronckhorst, but I think also under Beale and Gerrard, again, getting yourself into a situation where you can generate good results through this really high intense, aggressive football, and that serves them quite well. Actually, I think in the most recent league match between the two teams, Rangers were unlucky to lose that, and I think this does happen for Celtic, is that they come up against Rangers and Rangers are so aggressive that it just sort of destabilizes their sort of more patient possessional style of play. I found that dynamic quite interesting, almost as though Rangers are better set up for the derby games than Celtic these days. And again, it was a tough game yesterday for Celtic. They went 2-0 up and then Rangers came back a little bit in the second half. Ange Postecoglou was asked in the post-match interviews about why Celtic started going a little bit longer in the second half, but they were obviously doing it a little bit to reduce pressure. There's some interesting comments from Postecoglou because he was saying, you know, it's not my ideal way of playing, but on the pitch, the players make, you know, executive decisions. If they want to take a little bit of pressure off, then they can do things like that as well. So again, one of those, I just find it a really interesting dynamic that, you know, Celtic are going to more often than not blow away the other teams in the division. But when it comes to the derby game, there's almost a way in which the way that Rangers play suits underdog football, and those games are always really, really exciting. So yes, they proved to be no different.
Mm. I mean, Michael Beale's obviously managed in England before he's then headed to Rangers. I'm guessing he'll want to manage in the Premier League at some point. I can see Ange Postecoglou wanting to move and manage in England, but that's not to say he hasn't got a fantastic job at Celtic, a brilliant club, European football, all that you could probably want as a manager there right now. But also players-wise, do you look at either of those two teams and think, well, there's someone who could cut it somewhere else? Or
I mean, players do leave from there and go to other places. Like Joe Arable went to Southampton.
Well, Virgil van Dijk.
Larsson did all right after.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's Scottish football's odd, right? So if you say anything bad about it, people, like especially Scottish football fans, get really irate, and it's a real thing, right? I like watching Scottish football, but I know the standard is low. Yet good players can play in there. It's not slow. It's really, really fast. It's so quick. You have less time, like in English Premier League, because a lot of the time people just have to get rid of it because it's too quick. It shares similarities with, like, I don't know, the National League in England in terms of style, not quality. There's a thing, you get really good players playing there, but they have to mix in with the style. And there's a weird thing, I think, where often, this is not really what you asked, but
that's fine.
I'm on it now. What I find with Scotland is that when you try and play possession, like a possession-based game, and you want to make the pitch nice and wide to pass around, it's hard to do that in Scotland because you often play against teams who then just get really tight and block and then punish any space that you leave. And inevitably, you will do that by opening up to be able to play the way they want to play. But then you need to have really high-level technical players to be able to play in that game. Technical players tend not to do very well against big smashers that you'd get in certain teams, right? Livy, really direct, horrible to play against, really direct. That's what they do.
That's Livingston.
Livingston, yeah, sorry. And that's what they have been traditionally. I haven't watched every single game they played this season, so I'm sure they'll change. I saw them play against Aberdeen a couple of times. Aberdeen's beat them on the weekend. But so when you, like Aberdeen, in the last little while, played under McInnes, very much on the counter-attack, because that's what you have to do, because you don't have amazing players like Celtic Rangers have had. But the players you need to play that possession-based game are very expensive, and they can get paid far more elsewhere. So Aberdeen have tried to sign, as a particular example, trying to compete with Celtic and Rangers, have signed players from, well, they've changed their scouting network to try and identify players in markets where they could afford it. I'm trying to think, like Majovski's come in, I think he's from Macedonia. Different sorts of players, like not high-level internationals, but ones who are decent, who come in, maybe get a different price when you sell them on later on, but they're hard to get. But the players that Celtic and Rangers can buy are technically good and can play that sort of possession-based game much better than the ones that like Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen can get in. And so then you have to try and cater the way you're playing to fit in a different style of play. And so, like, if you're talking about good players coming in, there are good ones that come in to Scotland and they do well. I mean, Lewis Ferguson was at Aberdeen, did really well, and he's gone to Bologna and playing very, they just beat Inter Milan on the weekend, didn't they? Right? And Ferguson's an important part of that. He was clearly good when he was at Aberdeen there. And was looked at, I think Watford were really interested in trying to sign him. High-level players. Kenny McLean went to Norwich, did very well at Aberdeen. These are the players I see week in, week out, which is why I'm focusing on Aberdeen players. It's the ones I watch, so I can sort of see them. Scott McKenna is playing at Nottingham Forest, doing okay with them there. Ryan Christie's at Bournemouth. Yeah. Again, like ex-Celtic, but played for Aberdeen as well. James Maddison, like, said he cut his teeth at Aberdeen because he wasn't in the team every single week. He was like a YouTube kind of player, like lots of highlights, but couldn't really get into that Derek McInnes way, but you learn how to play a certain way. You got to really want to win it when you're playing in that sort of league. And it's interesting because you can definitely go there and play. And in terms of managers, like Postecoglou could easily go to somewhere like Brighton, something like that, and do a really good job. But then, like you said, these are big, massive clubs. The fan base is enormous. They play in front of 40 or 50, 60,000 every single week, and you get to manage in the Champions League. So you swap, like, so Beale went from QPR, Championship, where it's a yo-yo thing, hard to get out of that, stuck in there forever. Or you go to Rangers, compete for titles every single season, play in front of tens of thousands of fans, watch around the world, and you get to compete in the elite competition in Europe, Champions League. So why would you want to go there rather than like that's better than managing, I don't know, name a club.
Say it.
Not going to offend.
There's one.
Whose fans do I want to annoy? Like, you go to Everton now.
Huge, definitely smaller fans clubs. Hate their club at the moment.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
That's a good show.
But you go there and then what have you got? Right, you're not competing for Europe. It's going to take forever. Like, that's almost a closed shop now. It's going to take forever to get into that. And the money they've already spent, it's gone. You get a big fan base every single week. You're competing in the Premier League, but you lose most weeks. It's not amazing fun. Or you go and manage somewhere in Scotland where people think it's lesser. I don't know what my point is. I'm in a weird ranting mood today.
Callum McGregor.
He's good. Yeah.
Great player.
Absolutely.
Greatest player in the cinch right now. There you go.
Well said.
Jeremy Frimpong, everyone wants him. Everyone wants Frimpong. Is it Leverkusen, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. He was at Celtic. Did well there.
I think that's dealt with that nicely. Well done. Well, I think at this point, we should probably move on to some league rather than the minor league cup trophies. But let's have a break first.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
That was the break. That was it, right there. Everyone all right? Everyone well rested?
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
Yes, and...
And Premier League. Let's move on to the Premier League.
Don't sound too excited, Michael.
The Premier League! Exciting. We're going to start off with Tottenham 2-0 Chelsea. Tottenham are flying higher than they were. Chelsea are not flying. They are diving, crashing.
You're not committed to this bit, are you?
Well, I'm conscious we spoke a lot about Chelsea last week. And that is what it is. And I'm finding that Chelsea, it's sort of like, it's painful viewing, isn't it? It's watching through like gritted eyes.
Gritted eyes. Yes.
That's how they feel.
It is like watching through gritted eyes.
What could go wrong is going wrong. And
sometimes to feel pain, I just put grit in my eyes.
Yes.
So that I can.
Which is probably what it feels like for Graham Potter at the moment as well. Will he still be there in the coming weeks? That doesn't need a long answer.
Don't know. Every single week now, some of my friends in one of my WhatsApp groups go, that must be it now. That must be it, surely. And also Southampton. The problem with like the performance against Spurs, did you watch the game, John?
I watched the first half and I was like,
it's the same in the second.
I don't want to do this.
It's the lethargy in the passing. So like, tactics are very important in football, but you have to have the like intensity and desire and some sort of coherent plan. Like, I thought Newcastle looked really well coached in the League Cup final. Like, clear passages of play. They know where the ball should go and when. When the ball gets, when they press high and the ball gets cleared, they're in the right structure to be able to then head it forward to pass it out to the wing, to the fullback, so they have control. They control the games. Chelsea don't have anything. I don't know what they are. It reminds me of when... you bring a bunch of like mates just to fill in the numbers at five-a-side and they don't know each other, which is what they are, essentially.
That's what they did, yeah. Cost them a lot of money, more than £3, you know, for 45 minutes. Yeah.
£3?
Well, or whatever. That's the price of Norwich.
Things are good in Norwich, yeah, I was going to say.
So, yeah.
Cost of living crisis.
Sure, it's like £11 or something like that for 45 minutes.
My goodness. Premier League goals table here in front of me since the start of November. Chelsea and Everton propping up the rest of the division with six Premier League goals since November. Manchester City have scored 27.
That is bad.
That is particularly bad. So there we go. Well, but that will rumble on as it does.
Was
until
it two wins and 15 for Chelsea, I think? Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Two in a long time.
Now, that's not great form.
Nope, I know enough to be able to agree with you on that one.
Yeah. And if you wanted to move on from this, Mike, the last thing I'll put into it is that I think, who is it that said this? I think I might have seen it on the Twitters. It's saying how if they were to get rid of Graham Potter and bring someone else in, they'd need someone who can work with lots of young potential players, which is what Potter's quite good at doing. Because whoever comes in otherwise will go, well, I need about six first-team players now, which will cost an extra £180 million for each one.
It probably has got to the point where it would actually be pointless sacking him.
They should fire Graham Potter, then hire Graham Potter. He'd be the next best choice.
Just have like a palate cleanser before he comes back in, like a sorbet manager.
Who do you get? Who do you
get him in again? No, give him a break. Give him a break. Graham, go away. Have a break.
Seriously. Seriously now. Yeah. In Frank Lampard's voice.
Seriously.
Who do they get from here, do you think? if they were to bring someone in.
I think they should just go for the best narrative in world football of it's so bad now, just wait until 3 years' time when it's all clicked.
Just keep going.
Has a football club ever just sort of kept going regardless with the manager?
Part of me just wants to see this anyway. Because it feels as though that's what's happening, right? It's sort of like the fans are like, he's got to go, he's got to go. Yeah. Everyone's saying, you know, this is terrible, but they'll just plow on until...
How bad could it get?
I did a video on Potter recently where I said... Essentially, like, he tried to do his thing and now he's just got to a point where he's like, we'll play 4-2-3-1 and then just try and get the players to sort it out. And they sort of build up at the back a little bit, like pass it around, and then they yeet it forward really quickly.
He pins a piece of paper with the names on it to the wall and says, all right, guys.
Runs off, yeah. And it does seem as though that is what is happening. And I can't really get my head around why that is the case, why he's just able, potentially he's just completely lost control.
But then, like, it wasn't even that. It wasn't even the basic 4-2-3-1 in that game, because he was doing the thing where it's a four, which is a three, and then the front three is a four or a two.
One of them drops in. Yeah,
they look to me like they're all trying to figure out what they're meant to be doing and when and where. They don't know who's going to be passing. Yeah. So many times they get the ball and they can see they just pass it to the nearest person, then look around. They don't know where it's supposed to have gone. It's always the nearest pass. It's never. One of the things that Arteta's Arsenal do is that they skip the first pass, they go to the one guy after it, so you move play forward, but Chelsea just goes short, and then short.
A lot of people were saying that they felt that the passing was really turgid and Chelsea are playing really slow, but I feel as though the opposite is the problem. I feel like in the past, like, Graham Potter's teams have been that. They've been like maybe on the slower side of build-up.
This was
phase.
Really slow all the way through.
But like, in watching them recently, I just feel as though they sort of move it around the back and then they're like, right, we've got to try and get it in the left half space and then get everyone there and then see if we can solve a problem by just having loads of great players in that left half space.
But it's interesting because you see that passing map where passing was like a diamond on the left. But that must be a coaching problem. That's odd. Well, not coaching. Like, the coach is trying to get a team together. Like, what's he meant to do?
It's still only February, just about.
Well, you got a job in November?
It's a mess.
September.
And the players only arrived in January. I mean, it's a bit of hiding to nothing because Chelsea never lose to Spurs, do they? And they never concede goals to Spurs and they always beat them. And so it's a bit like, well, you're just rocking up and all of those things are just going to be a stick to beat you around the head with by the time full time arrives, which is what happened. Spurs, on the other hand, they are in the top four. As we speak, Newcastle do have a couple of games in hand, but still, they are good now, Tottenham, having had their struggles, back on it.
I mean, I wouldn't say they were necessarily good, but there have been slight positive shoots recently. I think a lot of it comes from the fact that Christian Stellini has been in charge for a few games, and I think to a degree there's like a freshness there in terms of some of the ideas that they had. So the Manchester City game, for example, was a game that was coached by Stellini on the touchline, and he did quite a few interesting things out of possession, which caused Man City problems, and I think Spurs won the game off the back of that. Stellini's obviously coaching in lieu of the fact that Antonio Conte has had surgery on a gallbladder issue, and has had a fairly rough couple of months as well. But even just the possibility of bringing in someone else to coach on the sidelines seems to have changed things up for better or for worse. So I do think there are some sort of green shoots there. That Spurs are still doing Spursy things, but I do think there's been a little bit more flexibility in their tactical approach, which maybe hasn't been there so much in the last few months under Conte.
Just the best moment seeing Oli Skip score his first Spurs goal. It was a wonderful goal too. They've got Richarlison, who's been starting now ahead of Heung-Song Min as well. So just a few tweaks to give them a bit of freshness, and it's working.
I think the best way to judge how well Spurs are doing is by asking any of their fans, who all seem to think that it's really boring to watch.
Okay.
Producer Don, good old Don, producing this podcast right now. Well, that's Steve, but he's doing the video if you're watching the video. Yes, he says it hurts his eyes.
Okay. Does the table hurt his eyes, though? Because they are fourth. I mean, admittedly, there is...
Don?
Does the table hurt your eyes, Don, as much as the football?
The games in hand make me worried.
The games in hand make him worried. I mean, there is a quality gap between the top three and then whoever does end up in the Champions League qualifying spots, John. They're just not as good.
Well, I mean, if you klaxon, look at the underlying numbers, I think Newcastle have actually been well worth their position in the top four. We've obviously talked about how things have changed for Newcastle in that, you know, tactically speaking, teams are now much better prepared to know what they're going to do. And so that may be going to change things. So if Newcastle can, I think, sort of get through this period of other teams responding to the way that they're playing, I do think that they'll have enough to challenge up there. And yeah, it's been a weak top four, I think. I don't think anyone looks at that top four and thinks, oh, you know, what a strong battle for Champions League spots, which is, I think, a shame, right? Because you look at the Premier League and you think six teams should be competing for four places, and it never feels like that's the way, right?
It's someone sitting there going, what a strong battle for Champions League places.
That's what I do.
Is that what you do when you're quiet in the office?
I sit down and I look at the table and I think,
what a strong battle.
What a strong battle.
Stroking your beard.
That's right, yeah.
That's what happens behind the scenes. Steve has informed us it's £3 for a seven-a-side in Cambridge as well, which is obviously...
Big strong battle there.
Yeah, for the...
Strong battle for seven-a-side places in Cambridge. That's what I always think when I look at the prices.
Oh dear. Anyway, another team that are more rubbish than we thought they would be at the start of this season. Thank you for writing that link.
A nice segue, Steve. Again, right? We've just talked about teams who should be doing better, right? Liverpool are a team who should be doing
better. They should be doing
Chelsea
better.
Chelsea should be doing better, and Spurs should be doing better.
And it's not for the want of us trying to talk them up.
I think everyone should win the league.
I think everyone should be challenging for Champions League spot.
I think both Rangers and Celtic should have won the cup.
I think Celtic and Rangers should be challenging for the Champions League spots. And imagine what a strong battle that would be.
Is that why the trophies have two handles, so both teams can, you know, walk away with them?
Exactly. Whoever's stronger gets to keep it.
Why would it have a third handle? Is it for the referee?
To deter evil.
Excellent. Liverpool. We were trying to talk up their path back into the top four. Have they just sort of wandered off already?
Well, as we discussed last week, football is stupid inherently, so it doesn't matter. They're very broken at the moment.
It's Crystal Palace 0-0 Liverpool, by the way. Which
Crystal Palace is a club where, like, all the fans want to be doing better, but they're also sort of trapped in that mid-table bit where they can't quite get out of it. But I mean, they've taken points off big teams. Crystal Palace are quite good at that. They've beaten City quite a lot in the last few seasons.
And they've got some cracking players as well, Palace.
Yeah.
But then what? And the manager's
name
doing
the cracking
job.
Players, Michael.
Eze.
Yeah.
Eze.
Well, he's a good player,
Eze.
Yeah.
Michael Olise, yeah, I like a lot as well.
Wilf,
he's all 30, isn't he now?
Oh,
I've taken I've written him off. Yeah, it's not as good as when he was 27.
Exactly. Yeah, those 3 years made all the difference. He's done now. Do we notice how lots of players, they talk about how, like, oh, they'll be good when they're older, but then they say, oh, well, he's getting to the end of his career now, and the window is roughly 25 to 28.
25 minutes.
Yeah. So it's like, you only get to be a footballer for 3 years. It's a shame that with 20 year career.
Liverpool blow my mind, you know. I was saying this before. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a team go from being potentially one of the best teams in, like, ever to just now whatever they are. Yeah. It's mad. Like, I understand teams dropping off and, like, not be doing so well and being like, oh, you know, they've gone through a cycle. They need to reset and stuff. But Liverpool have not done that. They've literally just collapsed. They've entropied to this soggy mess of a football club, and I can't get my head around it because. And that's why everyone's wanting to see these results, right? Where Liverpool beat Newcastle and being like, okay, this is it now. Like, things have changed, things have got back, but it's not. Like, this team needs to be completely rebuilt. They need to change everything.
It's everything.
It's massive, though. Like, the drop in Van Dijk is incredible. I mean, he had an injury, maybe that's related. But then they just never have players available because they're all injured. Salah has been shunted out in the wing. He's still doing okay. Like, I did a video recently where I said he was struggling. He's not struggling, but he's just not hitting the heights. But nobody is. Then you've got the players they brought in just don't replicate what they had. They had a great little chemistry mix with Mane and Firmino. That was kind of, I mean, that's sort of accidental. Firmino was bought by Rodgers before, and Klopp came in and dealt with him and turned him into this superb player. But the midfield, is it lacking? Is it? I don't know. Alexander Arnold, everyone's targeting him every single week. And the same problems are always there, but it seems to be almost getting worse. I don't know. Like, I always feel bad talking about Alexander Arnold because he gets so much. People slag him off all the time. Like, obviously a good player going forward, but the weakness is at the back, and they don't target him directly on the wing. They target him by putting someone on him at the back post, and they double up at the back post on him all the time. Obviously his Palace didn't score here, so that's irrelevant.
They kept a clean sheet.
Yeah, but it's just one problem of many, like that. And then Van Dijk's a weakness, and then there's this stuff going on that the press doesn't work. People can get through the midfield too easily. They don't have the intensity that they once had, and it's all built on that. And then where do you go? How do you rebuild that?
Yeah, it's crazy. And we talk about Chelsea being like disappointing, but like Liverpool, with Chelsea, you feel like anyone can beat them at the moment. And there's a sense in which that's almost true for Liverpool as well. Like teams going up against Liverpool, you kind of think, wouldn't be surprised if they lost this game.
Where has the quality gone? The depth of quality in the Premier League? Absolutely disgraceful.
Not a strong battle.
Not a strong. Well, yeah, but lots of battles of equal weakness. And next up, two new managers down at the bottom, where Leeds United 1-0 Southampton. What a debut for Javi Gracia at Leeds. John, it's on. The Great Escape.
Yes, the Great Escape.
Yes, come on, be excited.
Possibly one of the most expensively constructed bad teams of all time drags themselves out of the relegation zone.
It's a great narrative.
Yeah, it was fine. Javi Gracia is a manager who is obviously towards the bottom of Victor Orta's list. This is not how they anticipated
how far,
things
how far
going.
Down the
I don't
list,
know. I
do
heard
reckon?
That they had a 12th? List of about 40 managers,
oh,
right, of a short list.
4-0.
Yeah, 4-0. And I would not be surprised.
Is that a short list? Can you have a four?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's a pretty lot. Still. Okay, yeah, so 40. Where do you reckon? Where would he be on your list of 40?
Well, I think that they did talk about only approaching managers who were already in work. And then they realized that when a manager is contractually obliged to another club, it's actually quite hard to get them to be.
So would they have still been on the list?
I don't know.
Would you need a filter at the top to go, well, yeah. Like we're going to have to knock
this
down? So then, yeah.
But obviously what the...
So top three choice probably then.
Yeah. But it's a weird phenomenon because obviously they have ideas about how they want the club to play and what their game model is going to be. And they plumped on Jesse Marsh and the sort of Red Bull approach. It didn't work, but they were desperate for it to work. So they persisted and persisted and persisted and then eventually panicked and fired him. And then they're like, well, it's okay because we've got all of these other plans of other managers who can come in and play a different game model and play good football and get us forward. And they approached a number of them and there was a lot of really good names in that list and it was exciting. And none of them came. And then you got into this situation where you're like, well, maybe we give it to the caretaker manager for the rest of the season. He's done really well against Manchester United in two games, play against Sean Dyche's Everton, promptly get, I mean, battered
1-0.
Battered 1-0 by another not great team and then they panicked again. So Javi Gracia, I think, is probably in the circumstances one of the better managers we could have picked up, but we're now in a situation where we've got an interim coach, quote unquote, whose job is to keep us up. And I think if he does keep us up, they'll find it very hard not to keep him. And now you're in a weird situation where you're ending up with like an unideal manager now as your trajectory forward into the future, which was never the way that it was intended to be. So, yeah, like, great that we got the win. It wasn't the best performance, I didn't think, but like you wouldn't expect that with the amount of time that you have to turn. He had to work with. I mean, he had issues with work permit stuff all the way through the week. So, in the next few weeks, months, we'll find out whether or not his team are going to look anything like good enough to get out of the relegation battle, because obviously this is our easiest game of the season, right? Bottom of the table at home, and that's like that for me. That's we're now in. We moved from a situation where we got like a really nice mid table finish under Marcelo Bielsa. Everything was exciting, and then since then we've pretty much every decision that they've made at the board level has pretty much been worse. And now we've got a manager who is a Watford manager in 2016-17 for a couple of seasons. And
yeah.
That's the reality that we're now at, right? Is that we've gone from being, we could have been a mid-table side with an exciting coach, with exciting players if we'd have planned it correctly. And now the reality is that, you know, we are staying up at all costs. And that's, you know, that's fair enough. That's what happens in the Premier League. If you make a few bad decisions, you become one of those teams where, you know, it's all about scraping points where you can. So on the one hand, yes, I'm elated that we won. But on the other hand, it does represent for me something like an obvious decline from where we could have been as well.
I'm like the supporter every club would want, because initially I was like, whew, Javi Gracia, that's strange. And then I was like, oh no, he got Watford to an FA Cup final and he kept Watford up. Oh, it's a great appointment. And I end up, you know, sort of thinking, oh, that's an interesting thought.
When I saw the news that he'd been appointed, I went back and watched some of the football from 2016.
Did it hurt your eyes?
It's remarkable how much improvement there has been in the Premier League from that point. But in the 2017-18 season, you basically have the top six. And below that, there's like Leicester City, who obviously recently won the Premier League. Everyone else is teams like Swansea, Huddersfield.
Keep Fulham, naming them,
Fulham,
John.
When they were bad. Like Brighton when they had Chris Hughton. It's like a whole litany of clubs who you'd be like, yeah, they probably could go down. So the standard of football has definitely changed since then. So it will be interesting to see like how he works out with Leeds. I think he's an underwhelming coach in many respects. Yes. And my worry is that we get to the summer, he keeps us up and we just keep him, rather than actually thinking, right, who were those coaches that we were going to bring in who had the exciting trajectory? Let's bring them in now while we have the chance. And I don't want to get into that Everton cycle of being like, well, let's keep this manager and then sack him by Christmas the next year, bring someone else in, like soldier on through the league, and then get into that cycle of like mediocrity forever. Maybe he'll be good. Maybe he'll be great. And we won't be able to know for a few weeks on that. But yeah, I'm sort of happy and sad about this at the same time.
The problem with a 40-strong shortlist, really. JJ, who would you like to relegate? I mean, I say that like who's going to get relegated from the Premier League? Yeah.
Well, I often look at the Premier League and think, what a strong battle
for relegation.
And I think delete most of them. I think just keep Arsenal, Man City, Man United, Spurs, Newcastle, Liverpool, Chelsea. That's all the ones that people care about in FIFA. Just keep those. Get rid of the rest.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Make it an 8-team league. Play them every single week. That'll be a strong battle.
That escalated quickly.
We've reached the part of the podcast where I have become tired of talking.
Excellent. Well, in that case...
You could bring Celtic and Rangers into that league as well.
I would do that.
Get rid of them from the Scottish Premier.
And then maybe like Barcelona, AC Milan.
You could call it the Super Premier League.
I wonder if anyone's thought of this.
Let's hope not.
It seems like quite a good idea, James.
Well, like when you're playing, FIFA or Pro Evo or something, although I haven't really played it for a while, you always choose the big teams, you know? Like PSG.
Which we'll speak about after this break.
Just trying to give you an excellent segue there.
You achieved it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
That was a lovely break. Another break. Let's talk about PSG. So wonderfully teed up.
Let's talk about
JJ.
You and me.
Baby. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things and Lionel Messi. Oh.
Let's talk about Mbappe.
Yes.
Do this game, like, Marseille fans clearly don't like Paris Saint-Germain very much. They had to have, like, riot police holding up shields to protect players while they're taking corners and celebrating goals, which is a bit nuts. That's one thing.
Okay.
Not really. Let's get the best of the
first. That sounds
like
a strong battle on the actual field.
Yeah, but it could easily turn into a strong battle. It looks weird. It's I don't pay enough attention to French football generally, so I'm very sorry if I'm missing a lot of stories here that I should know more about, so I shouldn't really talk too much about it. That's the thing. In terms of the actual football, this is based off like PSG losing to Bayern Munich in the Champions League as well, and you always think the whole point of them is to try and win the Champions League. Now, they're nowhere near it. Like, this game was just Mbappe and Neymar like messing about up top, like, the two superstars, and there's all these other lads at the back of the pitch doing the rest of the stuff. It's just a complete divide between it. Brian Ruiz looks a bit better. It seems to be becoming more of a...
Fabian Ruiz.
Brian Ruiz is the Fulham player.
I was going to say,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, he's doing well. Like,
really?
Well, they're just
late
trying
bloomer.
How old is he now?
Well, what, like I said, you know, you say footballers are only at their peak between 28, but I say give them all a chance. Fabian Ruiz, yes, ex of Napoli, that one. And that's one thing. I mean, PSG, much like in Scotland, should win every single game. Obviously, they've had a bit of a bad run recently. They're not doing as well as maybe some people hope they would have been. Galtier is looking a little bit more stressed on the sidelines, probably because he knows that they're about to lose to Bayern Munich in the Champions League, and then that's the entire point of his job gone.
Is that his job gone as well?
Well, they won't get fired, but what's the point? Like, the only point of them really is that they it's so imbalanced with the money there. Obviously, in France, it's done a lot better than it has been in certain other leagues because you've had other, I guess you call them random winners. Like, you've had teams that you wouldn't have thought would win it at the start of the season who have done so, which is nice. So at least that, you know, it proves that money doesn't ruin everything, even though it does. But that's the point there. Like, they're just so far ahead, but their squad isn't actually that good. Like, they've got a really good first team. There's not a lot of depth. There's some young players they've got coming through, but maybe they're trying to change their little plan.
They've had a lot of problem with money this season because, unsurprisingly, if you are paying the wages of Lionel Messi and Kylian Mbappe, and I guess to a degree Neymar, I don't know what his situation is like, but it's not great for your FFP. And so they had a massive, I think it was 65 million euro settlement, it was called, to agree to the fact that they'd broken FFP rules.
That'll help.
And Luis Campos, who's the sort of director of football guy, has had to cut a lot of wage bill. So they sold something like, they sold 9 players at the beginning in the summer, and they only brought in 6, and then they've used a couple of youth players to sort of fill in the gaps as well. But it means that their squad's quite thin, so it means that they've got, when all of their starting 11 is available, they can fit into this sort of 3-4-3 system quite nicely. But there's been a number of things that have happened. They've had injuries, they've had players out. They've also had this situation where Mbappe decided that he was playing as the central striker in a front three. He decided midway through the season he would actually prefer to play off the left. So they had to switch up to a sort of 4-4-2 shape. They played 4-4-2 with a flat midfield.
That's good of him.
With a diamond as well. So, and then the World Cup actually kiboshed them a little bit. So they were playing really well until the World Cup happened. They came back from the World Cup, and they've really dropped off a cliff in terms of their performance numbers. And I guess there's arguments to be made that, like, all three of their front three had very different World Cups. So Messi wins the World Cup, Mbappe narrowly misses out on winning the World Cup, and then Neymar is involved with a team who were, like, up there with the favourites of the tournament, who got knocked out in disappointing circumstances. And I think there's been questions about whether or not that's knocked their motivation. And I know that after a recent... They lost to, was it Monaco recently, I think, and again, Luis Campos went into the dressing room and apparently blasted the players for being like, "You're elite players, you should be performing really well, and you're just your heads don't seem to be in it at this point." So they're definitely a weird juncture right now.
They knocked out the cup as well by Marseille last time they played.
Yeah.
That's the thing, that with the way they play, as we've discussed many times before, that everything has to be set up to cater for those star players. You pay them all the money, so you can't have a really well-balanced team, but the balance comes by making everyone be far more defensive than what you need. So if you lock them down, and it is hard to stop Messi and Neymar, Neymar and Mbappe, like the goals they score, the link-up play was lovely. You can see that the goals, there's all highlights you can watch everywhere. They're really lovely to watch. But most of the game wasn't that. Like, PSG weren't in control of the game and dominating whatever. They comfortably won, which is maybe at odds of what I'm saying, but it's just them linking up with a bit of a breakaway. Messi just finds a tiny bit of space a couple of times. And then that's the difference you get. And when you go to Champions League and play against a team like Bayern, suddenly you really see that difference where you can't, you just, I don't know if it's sustainable.
You're just going to be able to control every phase of the game, right? If you're at the very elite level. And so that's why we're always talking about teams like PSG and to a degree Real Madrid, because they don't do that. They rely on these elite combinations of players to be able to get their upside there. And so, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how the fallout goes when they inevitably do get knocked out of the Champions League.
Yeah, and then what happens? Yeah, I mean, they're not saying they're bad. Like, they've got the players are good. Like, the midfield, like Vitinha, Verratti and Ruiz started that game. I thought Marseille were decent enough. I think they're missing some players, as far as I'm aware. But like they're not bad either. Eric Bailly, is that what you say? He was playing there. I haven't seen him for a while. I like watching random games now and again. Like Kolasinac. Like, oh, that's where he is. I like all that. But yes, the point being that they should win the league. They're probably not going to win the Champions League again. And then you just think, you've got all these lovely players like Messi and Mbappe. And what really is? What are they achieving?
What is the point?
But then, for them, winning the league in France is very big. So what am I to say anything? I'm saying you should go and manage in Scotland because it's a good chance to win things. What's wrong with being in France? You've got to have variation throughout the leagues. Otherwise, it is the Super League.
We've got to the point where JJ just discusses things with himself.
Yeah. I can do it more.
sounds like a strong battle that's going on inside
my head, yeah. I don't know really what I'm saying. A lot of things I've said, I think, in like third-person mode. I don't know what I've said. I know I'm saying things.
Well, let's just cease, JJ, for a second. Because some more strong battles. Briefly, the Europa League last 16 draw. Does anyone want to say anything about it?
Who's in it?
West Ham are in it. No, that's the Conference League. Manchester United are in it.
Oh, yeah. Sporting versus Arsenal.
Would this be them winning a minor or a major trophy? Anyone?
It's major for me.
It's mid. Middle.
Minor would be
a third tier of trophy.
Do you need a third tier? Third thing.
Cup winner's cup.
Major trophy, minor trophy, and then some secret third thing. Juventus versus Freiburg, my Fry boys.
Indeed.
Let's not forget them.
Yes. There we go. Let's not forget. We haven't forgotten. You haven't forgotten them. We haven't forgotten them. And Union Berlin are playing Union Saint-Gilloise, which is what I practiced before we started recording.
You nailed it.
And there are other ones.
The Europa League, is it better or worse than the Champions League as a rule?
As what, an experience or quality?
Not quality, but like, you know how the Champions League is like, it's the same teams every season at this point now.
It's more fun, isn't it? It's like the fun cousin. It takes itself a little less seriously because
and the
it
games
can't.
Are always nuts and fun because of that.
Away we go. Mm. Yeah. So what does that make the Conference League? Mm. No one knows.
Don't worry about that. It's in the basement.
I think that must be it, mustn't it? Time is done. Steve's nodding viciously.
It has to be it. JJ's going to like.
And JJ, well,
you're going to have to use shields, riot shields.
You know, when it's a bit like Graham Potter. I'm just tempted to see how it carries on.
Yeah.
So you just watch the car crash unfold.
Right, that's enough for this episode, I've decided. So say your goodbyes, it says here. So thank you, JJ Bull.
Bye. And another thing, it'd be good if I was the last person. That would have been good there, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been good. Thank you, John.
Bye.
There he is. Thank you to Steve and Don for their sterling work. Thank you to you, the listener. And goodbye.
And another thing.
The Athletic.